Our scripture today comes from Exodus, and I'll be reading some selected verses from chapter 20. Then God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that which is on the earth beneath it, or that which is in the water under the earth. You shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses the name. Remember the Sabbath day. Keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. Honor your father and your mother so that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or slave or ox or donkey or anything else that belongs to your neighbor. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Will you please pray with me? May the words of my mouth, the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, for you are our strength and our redeemer. Amen. Lying is a lot of work, or so I'm told, you know. And it does terrible damage to relationships with God and neighbor. So why do we do it? Why do we do it? Because we do lie. A recent poll asked if people lied. 91% of us lie regularly. That is, if people didn't lie when they took the poll about lying. And get this, we lie most frequently to family and friends, relatives. We'll tell the truth to a stranger, but to those we love. Surprised, are you? Well, according to the survey, we bend the truth an average of 1.65 times a day, and that's no lie. That's statistics. You thought it was more, didn't you? Yeah. Well, we tell a lot of different lies. We tell WD-40 lies. WD-40 lies to keep things moving, like conversation. We say, oh, I'm fine, when really we feel like our world's falling apart. We tell logistical lies, such as, oh, I'll be there soon, or the check is in the mail for things we intend to do. We tell charitable lies, such as, of course, that doesn't make you look to be kind or avoid a confrontation. Of course, most of the day-to-day lies do not rise to the whopper told by a postal carrier, according to the Atlantic magazine. They had an article in that magazine where a woman appeared on the show The Price is Right, raised her arm, and gave that wheel a spin. So what's the problem with that? Well, 5 years earlier, she had filed for workers' compensation, claiming she was injured on the job and her injury was permanent, unable to stand, to reach, to grasp as part of her job, which she demonstrated quite well for Drew Carey and the rest of the world on The Price is Right. The game show tape kind of caught her in a lie, as did the pictures posted on Facebook showing her riding a zip line on a Carnival cruise. And so she was indicted in federal court for workers' compensation fraud, where she finally told the truth and pleaded guilty. Clearly, people lie. We do. Everyone does. We may not tell big lies that lead us into federal court, but we're not as truthful as we ought to be if we're really really honest. So is every lie, including the smallest, little, itsy bitsy tiny violation of the ninth commandment, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor, is every one of those bad? Aristotle said, truth-telling is a matter of relationships more than simply spilling our guts and unloading everything we think about someone on them. The Apostle Paul calls it speaking the truth in love. True honesty is speaking the right truth to the right person at the right time in the right way for the right reason. Right truth, right person, right time, right way, right reason. There are truths that I know, for instance, that are not mine to tell. If someone tells me something in confidence, asking to keep the secret, if I tell that secret, I have taken something precious away and stolen it. And stealing is a no-no according to the Ten Commandments, too. Right truth, right person, right time, right way, right reason. Timing is also important. There are some things that are true but ought not to be told at a certain time. Just a couple weeks ago, I had a friend who shared with me that their only child was flunking out of college. That was the truth. Now, right then, right there was not the time to tell my friend that Wendy and I were going up to NAU because Ruthie was receiving an award for academics again. Although the truth, it was not the right time to share it. So I said nothing. To speak the truth in love, we must have the right truth, the right person, the right time, the right way, the right reason. Even a noble thing like the truth can be used to wound and hurt, because we can say the truth in such a way that it silences all communication. The other person is overwhelmed by the severity of our judgment. That doesn't help to say, it doesn't help to say judgments are true. It's so hard for couples to learn that. It's just because you have the truth and you're right doesn't mean you need to share it. Speak the truth in love. Right truth, right person, right time, right way, right reason. If one of those is off, don't share. The wrong truth, or the wrong person telling the wrong truth, or the truth told in the wrong way for the wrong reason does damage to the truth. You see, honesty and cruelty, they can fit easily together, and they do too often. When someone thrusts a newborn baby into my face and says, "Isn't this the most beautiful baby you've ever seen?" You know, what harm does it do for me to indulge in what some would call a charitable, harmless one and say, "Of course the baby is beautiful." Right truth, right person, right time, right way, right reason. The trouble is that we not only lie to others, but we also are deceitful to ourselves. So when you or I say, "Well, I wasn't completely honest with the person because I didn't want to hurt her feelings," be careful. I think a good test of a so-called charitable lie is to ask ourselves, does the lie protect the other person or does it protect me? Now, I gotta admit, it isn't always easy to tell the difference. Well, on this Sunday, I have a couple of questions for you, for me, for all of us. With the lectionary giving us the passage concerning the Ten Commandments and our focus on "you shall not bear false witness," do we tell the truth or do we lie as a country? Do we welcome folks with what is written on the Statue of Liberty? "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shores." Do we protect our citizens from violence? Or is it more truthful to be a tale of greed and money funneling to politicians and money going to profits for corporations? Do we take care of our elderly poor? I'm going to let you answer all those, but I would like you to ask those questions. Do we lie at church? Now, the average person lies, we know that. But do we at least not bear false witness at church? Well, I'm really busy this week. I can't help with the rummage sale. Ooh, and the truth may be, I don't want to. Or, I'm tied up. I can't give any more money. Well, when the truth may be, well, I want church, but I don't want commitment on my part. The other part that I want to focus on is, does the church as a corporate body, that's all of us together, do we lie? When we recite and publish our open and affirming statements, are we telling the truth? Our open and affirming statement is more than just welcoming the LGBTQ community. It stands for welcoming all people. It's printed in the bulletin every week. I hope you read it. I think it's the right thing to say. It says that all are welcome, one and all. But do we really? I think the truth is we're still learning how to be ONA, open and affirming. Now, some have said, I'm ONA, but I don't want it mentioned. Sort of like don't ask, don't tell kind of thinking. We're still learning. You and I are still learning. Some have claimed to be open and affirming, but have asked, what do I say when my neighbors ask, do you go to that gay church? It is not the truth that we are a gay church. That's simply false. The truth is we're trying to provide an extravagant welcome to people, all people, and treat them like Jesus would have treated them. That's the truth, with love and grace. We're still learning. If you want a church in which you always will feel comfortable in, that you will always agree 100% with the pastors, and you'll never be challenged to expand your faith, your capacity for compassion, and never have your toes stepped on every now and then the truth is, at least in me, you've got the wrong guy as senior pastor. Part of my job is to push and pull the envelope, to constantly widen the circle of welcome until it is large enough, profound enough, strong enough to welcome all people, loving them as God does. And the truth of that experience will create sometimes when you and I might feel a little bit uncomfortable, because the truth is, we don't let go of our biases very readily. We clutch and hold on to them. They help us feel comfortable. We're learning how to provide an extravagant welcome here. We're trying to learn to provide an extravagant welcome to folks who are singled or married or divorced or gay or filthy rich or dirt poor, residents, people just passing through, winter friends. We're learning to provide that extravagance to senior citizens who have not grown up, to teenagers who are growing up too fast, to soccer moms, NASCAR dads, starving artists, tree huggers, latte sippers, vegetarians, and junk food lovers. We're learning. We're trying to provide an extravagant welcome to those in recovery and those still addicted. We'll even give that extravagant welcome to those who are having problems, those who are down in the dumps who don't like organized religion. We're learning to provide an extravagant welcome to those who think the world is flat, those who work too hard, those who are unemployed, those who are underemployed. We're learning to provide an extravagant welcome to those who are inked, pierced, both, or neither, or don't understand what I just said. We're learning, we're trying to offer this welcome to those who could use a prayer right now. Have had religion shoved down your throat since you were a kid, and those who got lost in traffic and wound up here by mistake. And for all that to be the truth, for all of that to really be the truth, it takes more than the pastors of this church. It takes all of us saying and behaving in ways that communicate these things. It takes more than just our staff. It takes everyone communicating these things. We're not going to pay attention to how much or how little pigment you might have in your skin. It doesn't matter what side of the railroad tracks you grew up on. Sexual orientation won't determine your place here. How you express your identity doesn't either. It's great if you speak the language of business or music or curiosity or academics or universalism or orthodoxy or science or anything else. Your voice is absolutely welcomed. It means we're not going to look at national boundaries determining our factor in our philanthropy, our charity, our compassion. We're going to look at the world. Our open and affirming statement says all those things so truthfully as we stand before God. How are we doing? Are we bearers of truth or are we bearing false witness? I think we're still learning. It is the right truth, said by the right people, at the right time, in the right way, and for the right reason. So I say, what better day than today, people of God? Speak the truth in love. It is the right time to tell the truth. All are welcomed at the Church of the Palms. So let's do what we can to make that truth be true. Let us love each other as a church. And as individuals, let's be who God calls us to be, the Church of the Palms, right here, right now. May God make it so. Thanks be to God. Thank you. You may be seated. We do our best around here to talk about real issues truthfully. My very first statement from the pulpit as senior pastor 16 months ago had to do with the fact that, well, if you don't agree with me, that's okay. You're still free to worship here. You will be respected and loved and be part of the community. At the Church of the Palms, we also try to do our very best to speak the truth in love and grace. We're not perfect at that, but we try our best. This was an emotionally draining week for America. You have the names of those on our prayer list. Please pray for those who are mentioned. I want to say some other things, though, about this week. Martin Luther King said the church should never be the master of the state. It should never be the servant of the state. It should be the conscience of the state. And I begin by asking, how do we as Christians drain the puddles of injustice where the mosquitoes of terrorism breed? If there is to be hope in moving into confrontation with evil in a truly constructive way, one's actions must somehow come from love. We must deny to the terrorists their victory by refusing to submit to the kind of world they want to create. Some Christians are easily turned away from their greatness in their life by pursuing instead their own grievances and enemies. So how will we hand the story of this week to the next generation? What will its lessons be? If we go back a few years, speaking to President Bush at the service for 9/11 victims' families at the White House, Esther Haman, mother of Honor Elizabeth Wineo, a passenger on United Flight 93, said, "What these people are doing, working in the soup kitchens, building homes, working with underprivileged children, and in substandard housing projects, is what we should all be doing in response to my daughter's death. Please tell them for me, Mr. President, thank you." And she went on to say, "I don't want revenge for my daughter's death. I want peace. Peace." Archbishop Oscar Romero talked of peace. He said, "Peace is not the product of terror or fear. Peace is not the silence of cemeteries. Peace is not the result of violent repression. Peace is generous, tranquil contribution of all, to the good of all. Peace is dynamism. Peace is generosity. It is right and duty. We simply can't let terrorism drive us from being who God calls us to be. We in the church assert a vision of community, of tolerance, of compassion, of justice, and sacredness of human life, which lies at the heart of all religious traditions. Therefore, let us make right choices in our remembrances of this week, the events of what happened in Las Vegas, to pray, act, and unite against the bitter fruits of division, hatred, and violence. Let us rededicate ourselves to global peace, human dignity, and the eradication of injustice that breeds rage and vengeance. And so I'm going to call you to pray without ceasing. Now some have shared their fatigue about praying, demanding some kind of action. I believe both are necessity, prayer and action. So I invite you, if you are so inclined, to pray. Prayer will be needed. It's going to be needed for America's journey ahead. If you can't find anything coherent in your thoughts to string together, then pray with sighs too deep for human words. Those who have been affected by gun violence often cannot find words in moments like this. So there's a lot of sighing, a lot of silence. And then out of the silence, pray. We need to pray in our sorrow, anger, and hopelessness. Pray in our faith and our doubt. Pray for the murdered, the injured, the traumatized, each one a unique and precious child of God. Pray for families and communities forever altered. Pray for individuals and families in other places who in this moment are being re-traumatized because of the events of this week. Pray for all those around the world who are targets of violence because their beauty as a child of God does not fit someone else's definition of what is righteous or pure or worthy of sacred care. Pray for all of us who, by intent or apathy, continue to allow our nation to worship at the altar of the gun. And for those who believe that, well, innocence must forever be offered on that altar for the sake of freedom. Pray for those who will only offer prayers and nothing else. Pray for those who say it's too soon to talk about solutions, who will always find reasons to avoid truthful conversations. Pray for all of us that we might refuse to become further isolated from those with whom we disagree and choose to live only in theological and political camps that help us feel safe and reassured. Pray for those who think they know all the reasons that things like this happens, and for those of us who will return to a cocoon of self-righteous certainty. Pray for those who will become even more captive to the way of fear and only end up further down the path of death and brokenness. Pray for shalom, for peace, and well-being for everyone, including those who commit unspeakable acts of violence. Pray for yourself and for me, that we might not be overwhelmed by disaster fatigue, that we not accept violence as the new norm. Pray, and even as you are praying, commit yourself to be part of the transformation. And this is an important part in this. While it is brief, it is the foundation upon which we must build. Commit yourself to be part of the transformation. Then prayerfully choose one specific thing that you can do today to reduce violence and create just a little more peace on this planet. Pray, and may your praying then become a living and breathing prayer that this broken, grieving world so desperately needs. I thank God for all the law enforcement in Las Vegas who risked their lives trying to locate the man. I thank God for the doctors and the nurses and the firefighters and the paramedics who rose to the occasion, as they always seem to do on occasions like this. My friends, pray. Pray, pray, pray without ceasing, and then do something to bring about peace. One without the other is not going to work.